I decided to plead guilty to a very specific charge, which is basically urging people to tear down the G20 security fence at a public press conference organized by No One's Legal on June 24th, a few days before the G20 was slated to begin. That together constitutes counseling to commit mischief over $5,000. Saying over $5,000 because the security fence is worth apparently $5.5 million. And there's some background details that are important, which are that I wasn't originally charged with this. I was charged with 3 serious counts of conspiracy, which 17 other co-accused were facing. These are serious charges that the Crown has already indicated that they would ask for penitentiary terms, meaning at minimum of 2 years if they get convictions. The preliminary inquiry for that conspiracy charge was supposed to begin in September. It's going to last at least 3 months. And there's really no prospect of trial until at least 2012, potentially 2013. So that's all background to my reasons. One of the reasons is that I am deciding on my own timetable and my own terms, relatively speaking, how to terminate my legal proceedings and sort of get back to my community in a full way, because I'm still involved in my community, but clearly I'm impeded by having these charges hanging over me. Secondly, it allows me to be very political and outspoken about my resistance and dissent, along with other groups, to the G20. I'm stating openly and clearly in open court that I thought the fence should be torn down, that it was illegitimate, that the G20 is illegitimate, that people have good reasons to confront and to disrupt the G20. And that can be said, and we can get into that political discussion about whether what I said, regardless of if it's illegal or not, whether what I said is correct and something that should be considered. As I said at the fence, and I stand by it, there are contexts and places in the world where that kind of fence would not even be considered. It would be something that people would rise up together and tear down. And yet it was accepted in polite Toronto under this Stephen Harper billion-dollar security operation. So by pleading guilty, I'm able to get to that, because under the conspiracy charges, everything's covered by publication ban, and there's really nothing that I can admit to with the conspiracy, because there was no conspiracy. If there was a conspiracy, it was a conspiracy of thousands and thousands of people to resist the G20, which of course is not a conspiracy. It's organizing. This allows me to be frank and open and to talk about the political side of issues. And finally, on a very practical level, after the preliminary inquiry, so let's assume I didn't plead guilty to this and I went forward with the conspiracy charges. After the preliminary inquiry, they can decide to drop charges and they can decide to add charges. There was a possibility that they would drop some or all of the conspiracy charges. So perhaps I should wait for that. But it was inevitable. The Crown had already indicated that they were going to proceed with an indictment for this specific charge, but they would do so at the preliminary inquiry. In other words, I can either deal with this now on my own terms in April and May of 2010 or 2011, or I can wait until January to do the exact same thing. So clearly, why wait when I can deal with it now? So there's a mixture of politics and practicality and ending things on my own terms. And I'm doing so, I feel, from a position of strength and support. I feel well supported. I feel like I've made a good decision. I'm doing so in a way that is in solidarity with other co-accused. There's absolutely nothing within my plea that can be used against anybody else. If anything, I think it lessens the specter of a conspiracy, because previously I was a co-conspirator and there was a specter of people secretly doing things when in reality I was very public and open about what I was doing. And even if you assume the so-called worst case scenario, right, which is that the judge comes back and gives me 6 months in jail, which is what the Crown is asking for, and let's say the next day the Crown decides to drop all the conspiracy charges anyways, I would still feel okay about the decision, because I'm doing it on my own terms. I'm doing it in a way where I can speak to the issues at hand. The prospect of prison is something that I'd rather avoid. You know, I don't have any illusions that I'd rather be out than in prison. But it's something that, you know, I'm prepared to take responsibility for because of what I said. And again, as the Crown is alluding to, as I've said several times, which is why the Crown can allude to it, these matters aren't about guilt or innocence. The victories aren't determined by you know, you've lost if you're guilty, and you've won if you're innocent. It's rather, what kind of movements are we building? What kind of struggles are we part of? The fact that people get repressed and charged and jailed and the rest of it are part of resistance. And it's more, how do we deal with it in terms that make us stronger? So I feel being able to say, hey, yeah, I urge the fence to come down, and I'm going to take the hit for that, and to do so in a way that's not apologetic, I think that's important. I think that is a good way to follow up from the speech itself that I gave. And again, it's not something I did alone. Obviously, there are a lot of other people who are involved in these movements, and I feel a sense of accountability to those movements. And it's sort of by making this plea and doing what I'm doing, I am being accountable.
By pleading guilty to the count of counseling, has the Crown agreed to drop the other conspiracy charges?
Yes, absolutely. Like, it'll officially happen when the judge hands down his sentence about whether I get jail or what have you on June 21st, which I requested because I didn't want the possibility of going to jail in May. but absolutely, the agreement is on paper, and I've made the extra effort to make sure that the agreement is both in English and French, because I come from Montreal and Quebec, where a lot of people will read it only in French. And it's all public, so there's a plea agreement that indicates specifically what the Crown is going to do and what I'm going to do. And basically all I'm doing is pleading guilty and saying I'm not going to apologize, and it's clear here that there's no cooperation with the Crown, that there can be no evidence used against others. The statement of facts and the other evidence is all public as well, and as of several hours ago when I made my plea, that's all now public, so people can see it for themselves. The conspiracy charges will be withdrawn against me.
So going forward, what do you hope to get out of this?
It's a hard question to answer, because when you're charged without choosing to be charged, I didn't ask to be charged, it's sort of a situation not of your own creating. So I didn't go into this wanting to get something out of it. I was charged, and I'm dealing with the situation, and I'm resolving it as best as I can with as much principle and integrity as I can muster in doing so. So what I'm hoping to do is to support people who are still facing charges, and I'm a more effective supporter by not being charged myself. I'm hoping to continue community organizing. I'm hoping to politicize what's happening, but I don't have any illusion that that's done in the court. What's happening in the court is a very capable lawyer with my support and my help will make the argument that the court needs to hear about this, and I'm doing so in a way that, again, maintains integrity and principles. Clearly, if I said sorry, there'd be a less of a penalty against me. That's the way the law works. If I said, oh, I'll never do this again, that'll help me. But I can't say those things because they're not true, and they're not just true to myself, but they're not true to our movements. 276 individuals and groups wrote letters, and there could have been a lot more, essentially supporting not just me being charged, but also what I said. So I have to take that hit. I can't pretend to be sorry. I can't pretend that I'll be rehabilitated and just live with those consequences. But consider what the consequences are. In the worst case scenario, I'll spend 6 months in jail and then go back to my community. And in a better case scenario, I will have no jail time. So I think it's a reasonable hit to take. In any situation I'm going to be put in, I'll learn from it. I'll learn from people, and that's sort of the nature of our movements as well. Like, we have this fierce belief in equality and how everybody has an inherent dignity. So being in prison means you just meet another group of people who have that, you know, who are my equals and have that inherent dignity. And I'll learn a lot. I've always learned from any experience. But like I said, I don't want to fetishize the prison experience either. It's something that we'll see if it happens or not, and I'll only know on June 21st. What we're going to argue now is the legal arguments that need to be made based on case law, which is pretty esoteric for a non-lawyer, and based on my character and reputation, which is what the letters are going to convey, that jail time makes no sense. But the law sets its precedence, and it's not in the courts that we decide what's permissible for us or isn't. We decide that in our movements, through our debates, through our principles, through our organizing, through our struggles, what tactics and strategies we feel are necessary to achieve social justice, and that'll always be the case. So I mean, I think it's almost the question answers itself when I say, does anybody truly believe that it's not part of our tactical and strategic arsenal to do direct action and tear down oppressive symbols? And not just a symbol, but like an actual oppressive thing, the fence, that gets in the way of us confronting the people responsible for misery. Does anybody truly believe that the court, no matter what their sentence is, will prevent us from considering that and doing so? Of course not. That's a legitimate thing to do. Everywhere in the world. It's not even an ideological thing. It's not a left-wing thing. You know, people of any ideology will say that you have the right to undertake direct action for justice. I mean, then we argue about what's appropriate or what's not appropriate, and when it's appropriate and when it's not appropriate. So we should continue to have those debates. So I'm just trying to terminate this matter, again, in as effective and strategic way possible, but to do so also keeping in mind, I'm always reminding people that they should pay attention to and inform themselves about the charges that other people are facing, including my 17 co-accused and other people who aren't charged with a specific conspiracy, but other charges. Unfortunately, it hasn't got to the stage yet where a lot of information is out, but it shouldn't be something that people discover at the last minute. They should really inform themselves. And then having soon to be a former co-accused with those folks, I know intimately the details of the case, and I know intimately what it means to go through that process. And I know how much it means to hear from people that you know well and people you don't know very well who show interest, who provide a word of support, and who do tangible, concrete things like raising money or raising awareness or just being involved in organizing in a way that's in solidarity with people being charged. But those things go a long way to maintaining people's morale. And it really are, those are the things that are the hallmarks of what a movement is all about. Like you can feel what a movement is. Like it's very abstract often, I think, for people, but you can feel what it is when you feel supported when you're going through something difficult. And that's not just through the legal process. There are people who are dealing with trauma and humiliation and a lot of other things just by their whole experience, because they're supporting their friends, or they weren't necessarily arrested, but they dealt with other traumas and what have you in their lives because of this police repression. And our ability to provide self-care and collective care and feel that support is a mark of our movement. So what's happening today and what will happen in other trials is just an extension of the protests and popular education work that we were organizing.
Yeah, you said that they're pushing for 6 months. Mm-hmm. Are you prepared to go to prison for 6 months for what you said? And what do you think that the Crown is trying to say by giving you, you know, the maximum sentence?
To answer it's not the maximum sentence. Okay. He could have asked for. I have to check that. But to answer the second part of your question, the Crown has made it clear what he's trying to achieve, which is he doesn't believe that this will deter me from doing it in the future. He doesn't believe that this will change me. He doesn't believe it'll make me sorry. He used the term general deterrence and an exemplary sentence. And that's legal jargon or legal language to say that we need to send a message to the community that if you were going to do this kind of thing, this is what you would face. So clearly, in the Crown's mind, 6 months in jail for me isn't a big deal for me. He acknowledges that. But it would be a big deal for somebody maybe less inclined to be outspoken and act on their beliefs. And that's what he's getting at with the rule of law. So the Crown's made that clear. That's what general deterrence exemplary sentencing is about. So they want to basically make me a model for what not to do. They want to make me the scapegoat. In terms of whether or not, if I'm prepared for the 6 months, I wouldn't have made this plea if I wasn't prepared for that. So I agreed to the plea, knowing full well that one potential outcome is going to jail for 6 months. So I'm prepared to deal with that.
And what can the community do in response to this, and not just to your charges, but obviously the larger criminalizing of activists?
Well, I alluded to that before in another answer, but it's to get informed about what people are facing, to offer tangible, concrete support in diverse ways. It's to continue organizing and maintaining our organizing. As I was quoted saying when they played one of my other interviews, I feel the number one thing you can do, I think other co-accused feel the same way, the number one thing that people can do in support when other people are facing repression is to make sure the organizing that we do day to day continues, that it's not derailed. So those are some examples. It's important that we not, like the people who are being charged are, you know, are clearly, if you use a really rough, crude way of describing protesters as good protesters and bad protesters, they're the bad ones. So one important thing to do is to get beyond that false division of good versus bad protesters, and to have a very good movement discussion and debate about strategies and tactics, but to do so in a way that shows support to people. Never has anybody in our political movements demanded that everybody agree with everybody else 100% of the time. But we don't want to do the state's work for them. We don't want to get into divide and rule that just makes us ineffective. So I think that's really important, especially because people are being charged with conspiring to destroy property, attack the fence, break through police lines. There are people who've already been convicted of like burning police cars or are going to face those charges. So I think we need to be able to discuss that while maintaining support for those folks, you know, in a non-judgmental way. And that will make our movement more effective. If, you know, like, often the meaning of a moment in time, like whether it's, you know, just to give some examples from the anti-capitalist globalization scene, like, you know, like Quebec City or APEC in Vancouver or Seattle or Genoa or whatever. It's not just those specific days that determine the importance of that. It's like a year later, or 2 years later, or 3 years later, or a decade more. So that remains to be seen how we relate to what happened in Toronto. There were a lot of illusions that were broken in Toronto. Illusions about what the police and the state are capable of and what they will do in terms of mass arresting people and humiliating them like they did in the improvised detention center, about the charges. There are also other illusions broken in terms of the tactics and the willingness of people to confront oppression openly on the streets. Lessons to be learned. And that's something that's still happening. So, you know, that week of intense activist organizing is still continuing now. And let's see if we can make those moments a positive thing, a building moment, and not a demobilizing one. And I'll answer that too by saying I feel up until now it's been pretty mobilizing because people have been showing strong support for each other. But we need more. And we need not to fall for these traps of dismissing people or sort of giving lip service to what solidarity and support means. Like, those are tangible things, and they mean very specific things, which I've already alluded to.